Welcome to the Montreal Media Co-op's latest segment on CKUT's Off the Hour. It's Tuesday, August 23rd, and I'm your host, Natasha Lipney. On today's show, the Under Pressure Graffiti Festival gives spray painting the artistic spotlight it deserves, and Fondation Emergence keeps the gay pride flag flying into old age. But first, a grassroots urban agriculture group attempts to force a public consultation at City Hall. Montreal has 75 collective, 98 community, and nearly 100 rooftop gardens tended by over 17,000 Montrealers. Still, the City of Montreal has no concrete development plans concerning urban agriculture. The work group on urban agriculture wants to change that. Last week, this assembly of grassroots groups launched a petition to demand the municipal government hold a public consultation on the state of urban agriculture in Montreal. According to a bylaw passed in January 2010, if the group acquires 15,000 signatures in a three-month period, the city must grant their request. Never before has this been achieved. To discuss this challenge is the workgroup spokesperson, Marie-Ève Vogel-Robert. Bonjour, Marie-Ève.
Bonjour.
Alors, premièrement, comment décrirez-vous l'état de l'agriculture urbaine à Montréal à ce moment-là?
En fait, il faut savoir que l'agriculture urbaine, c'est vraiment un ensemble d'initiatives. Ça peut être autant les jardins collectifs, les jardins communautaires, les jardins sur les toits, dans les cours d'école, les jardins des gens dans leur cour arrière. Ça peut être aussi les jardins dans les bacs sur les balcons. Ça peut être les rivelles vertes, ça peut être vraiment une multitude de projets. Et ce qui est merveilleux à Montréal, c'est qu'il y a vraiment une diversité dans les projets d'agriculture urbaine.
Parfait. Et comment est-ce que la Ville de Montréal adresse-t-elle cette situation d'agriculture urbaine?
Mais en fait, c'est un peu ça le problème et c'est pour ça que finalement, on a décidé de se prévaloir du droit d'initiative et de... c'est-à-dire de faire une pétition pour demander qu'il y ait une consultation publique sur l'état de l'agriculture urbaine à Montréal. Parce que en ce moment, il n'y a aucun interlocuteur à la Ville de Montréal pour répondre quand on a des questions ou des demandes par rapport à l'agriculture urbaine, que ce soit pour le financement ou les autorisations. Ça fait plus d'un an que les membres du groupe de travail en agriculture urbaine font des demandes auprès de la Ville, auprès des élus, pour qu'on parle de l'agriculture urbaine à la Ville de Montréal. Malheureusement, on n'a eu aucune réponse, donc c'est pour ça qu'on a décidé d'aller dans le processus de consultation publique et de pétition jusqu'au 8 novembre prochain.
Et qu'est-ce que vous voulez comme résultat de la consultation publique? Quelles décisions concrètes cherchez-vous?
Mais en fait, en tant que tel, on ne cherche pas nécessairement des résultats concrets. Qu'est-ce qu'on désire avant tout, c'est que on parle de l'agriculture urbaine, entre autres pour faire le point sur les projets d'agriculture urbaine qu'on a à Montréal, pour mieux comprendre puis surtout reconnaître les apports positifs de l'agriculture urbaine pour l'amélioration du milieu de vie, pour la santé des citoyens, pour surtout aussi orienter le développement des nouveaux projets pour adapter la réglementation, pour favoriser le financement des différentes initiatives et surtout pour plus mieux cerner la place que l'on souhaite réserver collectivement à l'agriculture urbaine. On ne veut pas nécessairement arriver à un résultat auquel on pense déjà. On veut vraiment que ce soit une réflexion et une discussion collective.
D'accord. Et comme j'ai dit, pour avoir cette consultation publique, la groupe a besoin d'accueillir 15 000 signatures. Quelle stratégie utilisez-vous pour accueillir ces signatures-là?
En fait, il faut savoir que le groupe de travail en agriculture urbaine comprend maintenant près d'une trentaine d'organismes qui travaillent en agriculture urbaine, en environnement, en santé publique, qui font partie du groupe de travail, donc qui, chacun dans leur quartier, recueille des signatures. Aussi, chaque citoyen peut décider d'aller recueillir des signatures. C'est très simple. Il suffit d'aller visiter notre site Internet au www.agriculturemontréal.info. Il y a des formulaires disponibles en ligne. C'est tout indiqué comment faire pour ramasser des signatures et les gens peuvent télécharger le formulaire, le faire signer dans leur entourage et le ramener à un des points de signature où les gens peuvent aussi aller signer, qui est indiqué sur une carte sur le site Internet aussi. Et il faut savoir que c'est ça, c'est 15 000 signatures de Montréalais âgés de 15 ans et plus, mais c'est des signatures papier.
OK, parfait. Merci beaucoup de nous parler. Je vous souhaite une bonne chance, Marie-Ève.
Ben, merci à vous.
From taking City Hall by the reins to sticking it to the man, during the weekend of August 13th and 14th, graffiti artists practiced their craft in broad daylight and made a show of it to boot. The 16th Under Pressure Graffiti Festival featured local and international graffiti and musical artists, b-boys, and skaters. One of the festival's main organizers, Melissa Proietti, joins us now by phone. Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
So, just to start off, I was wondering, what in your view is the City of Montreal's stance on graffiti?
Well, it depends. I mean, I think that that's a bit of a varied question and answer, because I think that the city and the different boroughs sort of approach the problematic or the question of how to handle graffiti a little differently. So, I mean, we've seen some positive reinforcement, like in the Southwest Borough, which you know, they're trying really hard to move forward with the idea of not just repression of, you know, youth or anybody involved with the graffiti culture, you know, but sort of doing an educational approach to it. There's other boroughs which aren't quite as supportive and which are trying different methods. So I think it really depends on which part of the city you were, you know, thinking about.
Okay. But if I understand correctly, the City of Montreal cut funding to the festival in 2007?
Well, as far as the festival is concerned, you know, we've had a sort of positive and negative, you know, a relationship with the city, in the sense that, I mean, they offered a bit of support. They did, in the end, take any financial support away. However, you know, I mean, we were placed in a way that we were able to create strong partnerships with others through, you know, through different connections that we have. So, I mean, in the end, it was, it worked out well for us.
Yeah, I noticed that this year you were able to expand even more than other years. Could you explain a bit about the partnerships you made and how you were able to make the Under Pressure Festival even bigger and better than in previous years?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this year Under Pressure was bigger than it has been in the past 16 years that the festival has been running. So that was a really big, big milestone for us, because it's always something that, you know, as a festival organizer, you would like to see your project continue to get bigger and better and succeed, or just see greater success. So it was really exciting for us. And basically, we were able to create a partnership with the CDU, which is the Comité de Développement Urbain, for the secteur Faubourg Saint-Laurent, which is exactly where the festival is located. And the director of that organization, which is a nonprofit organization, had approached Sterling and myself, in order to be able to run something a bit more along the lines of a street festival versus, you know, the way that we had been able to do it in the past. So that was a really exciting opportunity for us, and I think it was an exciting partnership for them as well, because they're looking to, you know, sort of develop that section of the city. We were also given the mandate to do two other street festivals during the summer. So, you know, we closed off the street Saint-Jean weekend and a weekend in July, and we had, we had a breakdance battle, we had a whacking battle, a hip-hop dance battle. There was, activities set up for kids, all in this partnership of trying to not only develop that area, but develop, the idea of maybe urban culture, I guess, because it's not only at, you know, about one specific part of the culture at that point, but just about the different aspects of urban culture and how they can really sort of knit a community together in a very positive way.
Right. And you opened a pop-up gallery this year across from Foufoune Électrique, where the festival takes place. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, that's the gallery is called Fresh Paint. There's exhibits that are going to be running from now. The gallery is officially open until December. So that was a building which also was within the mandate of the CDU, and they gave it to us with the idea that we would be able to, you know, renovate the building and make it accessible to the public once our festival is over, to sort of keep that, you know, mandate of artistic integrity and interest within that, you know, community, and still making it something something of an attraction for people, you know, either tourists or people that live in the area, that they would be able to go and check out. So the curator of the gallery, whose name is Elise, she's been, you know, booking artists from around the world. So we have, you know, people from Europe and as well as North America and South America and all over the place coming to exhibit there. So it's really exciting for us, because that's something else that, you know, we'll keep under pressure running throughout the year, which is another expansion on the festival that we're quite excited about.
And how does this pop-up gallery and the festival every year, how do they encourage a dialogue about what Under Pressure believes graffiti really is?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, first of all, our actions have always spoken louder than any words could, you know. So Under Pressure stands for a community of people, first and foremost, and it represents graffiti writers as people who have, you know, community values, people that are, that want to be citizens participating in society in a positive way, sharing their talents and passion with those people around who, I mean, you know, really appreciate what they're able to do and what they're offering to society. So I think that because the festival has had that mandate for the entire time, those actions and just bringing this positive, you know, festival to the community, we do it for free. Everyone that works on the festival is a volunteer. So just, you know, everyone being, having that attitude and being willing to participate in a festival under that mandate really has been able to push us forward. And then as we get, you know, a lot of recognition and more interest strikes with our festival, then any type of, you know, any type of media coverage that we can get, it's always the message that we're giving across, is that, you know, I mean, we're here to make this accessible to the public, and we're here to give it a positive message. Because, I mean, you know, personally, I just finished my master's degree at Concordia, and I had written my thesis about a graffiti project which was used as an educational tool, and that's something else that we do. So we're trying to make that link between education and, you know, a positive spin on an educational possibility with graffiti and the graffiti community. And so I think that in every, you know, interview that we do, and every time that, you know, Sterling or myself goes to speak to a group of kids or students or adults in school, it's always that message that, you know, I mean, we're open to everyone. We want everyone to come and see what it is that we're doing, and everybody is very excited and happy to be there. So as soon as you step into the festival, you're sort of taken into this world of, you know, I mean, of true community spirit.
Okay, well, thank you very much for speaking with us, Melissa.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
As the Under Pressure Festival spray-painted the streets, the Montreal Gay Pride Parade was having a similar colorful effect a few blocks away. I'm sure several of you attended. Over 2,000 participants walked in this annual celebration, including, as the Fondation Emergence would like to point out, senior citizens. The Fondation Emergence aims at improving the well-being and equal rights of gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgendered individuals, also known as the LGBT community. On August 9th, it launched the Pour que veiller soit gay campaign to raise awareness about the difficulties faced by aging members of the LGBT community, many of whom form the oldest openly homosexual generation. The Foundation's Director of Programs, Denis Cormier, is on the line to discuss this new campaign. Welcome, Denis.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Not bad.
Okay. I would just like to, first of all, ask, I saw on your website that the new campaign is based on a charter. Could you explain exactly what this charter consists of?
Yes, it's a proposition by Fondation Emergence, so it's 11 points that we want to be put on the place for elder people. So if you go in a place where you can have a place to live, and the director of the place want to put it on the wall, and it's for an agreement. Let's say by the director that the house is approved is 11 points on the charter.
And could you give us some examples of what these 11 points may be?
Okay, I take it. So the first at all, it's the treatment with all the LGBT people will be the same as the heterosexual people. Must I explain what is LGBT people?
No, I think that's okay. All right. If you can just give us maybe two or three of the points to give listeners an idea of exactly what the charter may be.
Okay, so the first one is in French. So, assurer aux personnes aînées, homosexuelles et transsexuelles le traitement égalitaire exempt de toute manifestation homophobe. So, can you translate? Or,
no, that's all right. Keep going.
That's all right. And the second point, assurer aux personnes aînées, homosexuelles et transsexuelles un environnement exempt d'homophobie. Do you need a translation for that one?
No.
Et maybe last one, prendre les mesures nécessaires pour que les personnes qui œuvrent auprès des personnes aînées ou les côtoient adoptent une attitude positive à l'égard de l'homosexualité et de la transsexualité.
Okay, would you like to explain that one further, maybe?
C'est donc une attitude positive à l'égard de l'homosexualité, that's mean. We don't want some people with homophobic attitude in our house or our hospital or our services.
All right. So. And you're saying that it's targeting, that you're going to give this charte to different houses, for example, for senior citizens. Are you going to be delivering it to any other groups, any other organizations?
All the organization to want to put this charter on their establishment are welcome.
Okay. And what exactly, other than this charter with the 11 points, do you give any other information to these organizations as to how they might treat these people better, how they might give them more equal treatment or make their lives better? Are they given any other help by the Fondation?
Yes, we are doing right now what we call trousse pour que vieillir soit gay. That's mean the kit pour que vieillir soit gay. That would be online on the website. So the charter is the first piece. After that, we will have a poster. So the poster says ici non à l'homophobie. So you can also put it on the wall on your house or hospital or social services. And the presentation PowerPoint, so you can see it on the computer to help you to understand the world of LGBT people. A guide for a person who will present the PowerPoint. Some exercise and some playing for one, we call that homophomètre. It's we put some sondage. I forgot the word in English. We do for years ago, and we put all all together to have the better question to, and you can answer it, and you can find if you are homophobe or not. With this exercise, we call that the homophomètre.
Okay.
And you will have also some pop video, 3 minutes, let's say, that will be available very soon. We ask some people on the street what they think about that. And we have natural fact. So what about homosexuality, transgender, lesbian, bisexual? And some ideas and some action we can the people can take in their place, in their house, in their services, and things like that. So we call that kit pour que vieillir soit gay.
Yes, and just very quickly, how exactly do you think this this kit, the Pour que vieillir soit gay kit, is going to help these senior citizens have a better life when they're living openly with their sexuality?
Okay, first of all, the kit is not for the older people. It's for the people who are working with the older people.
Right, so how are they going to help the senior citizens maybe live a better life? How is this really going to help them improve their lives?
It will help because they will live in environment more gay-friendly and with some people around them and more open to the reality of LGBT people elder. So if you live in an environment more gay-friendly or more open, you will feel certainly better.
Of course. Well, it was wonderful to speak with you, Denis. Thank you very much.
Thank you to you.
Goodbye. The Fondation Emergence works with Gay Écoute, a help and information center whose hotline you can reach at 1-888-505-1010. And don't forget our website is also updated daily with local independent grassroots coverage. If you'd like your event or issue covered by one of our reporters, don't hesitate to post it on our events or discussions board at montreal.mediacoop.ca. This will be my last show for the Montreal Media Co-op, but don't worry, our programming will continue as usual every second Tuesday on CKUT's Off the Hour.